Ohio's economic past, present, and future.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, broadcasting this week from WCPN in Cleveland, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. And as we wrap up our week of election broadcasts from Ohio, we're going to look at the state's economic past, present, and future. And when it comes to Ohio's economic past, there is perhaps no better place to start than a steelyard. Well, in the past, it was a steelyard. Now it's half steelyard and half steelyard commons. That's the name of a shopping center. My guide is historian John Grabowski from the Western Reserve Historical Society.
When the mills were closed down here, it was, I'll use the words, almost like an emasculation of the city. And we fought to keep the mills here. And if you look at old-time Clevelanders, myself included, many of our forebears came here, whether they're African-Americans coming up from Birmingham, Alabama, or my own ancestors coming from Slovenia and Poland. They came here for jobs in the mills or in factories that were related to the mills.
And they wanted to work in the steel industry and make a good living.
The steel industry wanted them to work and make a basic living. They fought to make a good living eventually.
So what went wrong?
What went wrong was those workers, I would argue, were only cogs in a machine. And we see again and again in industrial history, in cities like Cleveland, when one group of workers of one ethnicity or background became too expensive, they were replaced by another group who were less expensive.
One neighborhood that captures the past and the present is called Tremont, which grew up around the mill. Walk around the neighborhood today and you'll still find middle-class families with one thing on their minds.
Jobs.
Tina Konopka is a retired 69-year-old.
We have to get jobs, get people back to working again. That's the most important thing.
And when it comes to politics, Konopka is ready for a change.
Because what has been done hasn't been working. So they got to come up with something different, something drastic, I think, to get this country turned around.
But the interesting thing about Ohio is that in the same place where you find that view, you also find this view from 30-year-old public school teacher Rosanna Lucans.
I feel like while we're not in the best financial situation, staying the course and being with someone who respects what the real Americans are going through is going to be our best vote as a leader.
So as you can hear, the state's past has left its residents divided about the future. But one thing is for sure, says John Grabowski, the historian.
It's never going to be what it used to be. It cannot be what it used to be until there's a wage rate that's the equivalent of a wage rate in India or China.
Which is not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. And so we have to get used to a smaller city. We have to get used to a city with empty spaces. We have to get used to a city in which the economy may be driven in a different direction.
Coming up, we'll take a peek at Cleveland's economic future.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing retirement solutions that can help to guarantee income for life through its affiliated companies in the U.S. AllianzUSA.com. By Thomson Reuters, committed to empowering professionals of the world with the knowledge needed to do what they do best, the Knowledge Effect. And by MassMutual, a company owned by its policyholders and committed to putting them first. Learn more at MassMutual.com.
So here's the weird thing about Cleveland. You walk around downtown and see a city whose clothes are a little too big, if you know what I mean. There are more storefronts than stores. And yet it's a city whose largest private employer is being touted as a model for the country by both candidates for president.
Cleveland Clinic, one of the best healthcare systems in the world. They actually provide great care, cheaper than average.
Free people and free enterprises trying to find ways to do things better are able to be more effective in bringing down the cost than the government will ever be. Your example of the Cleveland Clinic is my case in point.
So let's go to the Cleveland Clinic and see what they're talking about.
Caution, automated vehicle approaching. Please move.
Door-sized rolling robots warn humans to get out of the way as they cart medical supplies across this sprawling complex that employs some 20,000 people. Steve Glass is the chief financial officer of the clinic.
And you can see this floor has magnets, and the computer robots are actually following the magnets in the floor. So that's how they know where to go, where to drop off. And, of course, they sense when people step in front of them.
So they don't crash into people.
We haven't had any accidents yet.
You ever taken a ride on one?
They don't let you. They got little signs on there so you're not allowed to get on them. But it's also an example of more efficient ways of delivering this, to have people 24/7 a day pushing carts city block lengths in order to deliver supplies. It's not going to make an efficient.
Now, pay attention to that word he just used, efficient. That is what the Cleveland Clinic is all about. For example, when you come in with a heart problem, all the doctors who see you work for the clinic, share information, and are on the premises.
Having everybody in one integrated system, having everybody access to the same information, the same processes, the same policies and procedures, the same quality of care across every care delivery, really trying to drive efficiency across all of that.
So what does efficiency have to do with the other E word, the election, and with Ohio? Let's get back to Dr. Grabowski, the historian from Case Western Reserve. What does the nation get from having this state, with all of its history and all of the baggage, good and bad, that comes along with it, pick the president of the United States in many cases these days?
I think it's absolutely perfect because, you know, Ohio in many ways represents all the varieties of the United States. And we're looking at people in many parts of Ohio who are staring major change in the face, which is something that the United States as a whole is staring right now.
Our Cleveland broadcasts were produced by Justin Ho, edited by Sean Bowditch, and engineered by Charlton Thorpe. We also had help from Mary Dew, Bridget Bodner, Nancy Fergali, Ethan Lindsay, Devin Robbins, John Haas, and Brendan Willard. Special thanks to our hosts here at WCPN, especially Jeff Carlton. In Cleveland, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
In cities all over the country, people are walking a mile in the shoes of the poor, participating in poverty simulations, acting out scenarios of hardship, and being treated poorly.
Hear so many hard stories that after a while, you don't know which ones are true, which ones are a little fabricated. In order for your own sanity, you don't make eye contact. You kind of like look through, right through people.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, simulating poverty next time on Marketplace. It's from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.